Welcome everyone to the HP Global Employee Ownership Podcast Series. Today we have with us Trent Crossan and Cole Whalen, who both serve as co-founders and managing directors of HP Capital. As always, we have Bob Whalen, CEO of HP Global, and today we have Sarah Kahn, VP Chief of Staff, filling in for Stacy. Today we have a really great discussion about HP Capital, what it is, how it adds value to HP Global, how HP Capital helps to promote broad-based employee ownership, and how they help facilitate the sale of equity from current owners to employees, and also how HP Capital helps diversify the HP Global business. Just a few housekeeping items before we get started. We recognize this podcast is available to the general public, but we just want to say the views expressed in it are in the context of HP Global and may not apply to broader audiences. With that, Sarah, take it away.
Well, thank you for having me here today to fill in for Stacy. I'm excited to talk about one of the ways that HP Global adds value to the ESOP outside of our regular business operations. But first, we have Trent and Cole. If both of you could just tell us a little bit about yourselves and how you got involved with HP Global and HP Capital.
Perfect. Yeah, Cole, I guess I could kick it off. So I came up kind of through the finance side of the business. Cole and I actually met in college. And after school, I went to work at Bank of America in their industrials group, in their investment bank. So was working on a bunch of interesting transactions. And then one day in 2020 in the summer, I met Bob out in Harrisburg, and we started talking about the different things we were working on. I didn't really know too much about HB, but was working on some interesting things in the airline space at the time. And then I think a couple of days later, we reconnected and Bob said, why don't you come out to Harrisburg and learn a little bit more about our business? Started learning about the ESOP and mechanical contracting and found it pretty interesting. And then a year later, I wound up coming over to work with him and HP as a whole. So that's kind of how I got there, really on the finance side, and am learning the construction as I go, still not too good on the construction side, but trying to get out to some field visits and site visits as we go here. So it's been awesome so far.
Yeah. And my upbringing was a little bit different than Trent's, kind of the opposite when we compare finance and construction. So I really grew up in the business. For all the HB listeners, I worked in the warehouse at H.B. McClure. I think I got my first paycheck when I was 16 from H.B. McClure, just cleaning the warehouse, weeding out in the parking lot. And pretty much my whole, you know, educational life, I was thinking I was going to come in, do construction, be a project manager. So I studied mechanical engineering in college, where Trent and I met. And after college, worked at IT Landis for 2 years as a assistant project manager on the HVAC side. So I learned from a bunch of great guys at IT Landis and was really getting the hang of construction, as it's something that I think it's harder to learn than what people on the outside probably think. There's a lot of different aspects that you have to learn. It's not just making sure the material and the people are on the job site. You have to manage the GC, you have to manage your own people, you have to manage subcontractors. So I was really in the weeds, I guess you could say, of construction and learning. And Kyle and my dad and Trent came up with an idea that we'll get into, and came to me and asked if I wanted to leave the construction side right when I really thought I was learning it and jump onto the finance side. And so I decided I would do that, moved back to Harrisburg, and decided to get a finance degree from Georgetown to try to learn the finance side as I was working. And just like Trent, I think I got my hands around construction and I'm still learning the finance side as we go. I finished up the degree, which helped, but real life finance is definitely a lot different than academic finance. So learning that now, and now I think it's been about 3 years, which is crazy. So I've been in the workforce for about 5 years and more than half of it's been on the finance side. So just learning, and kind of how Trent and I merged was finance was him and I was construction. And now we're joining the two, learning the opposite side at the same time.
Very nice. And so, you know, we mentioned it a couple times, but we've all heard a little bit about HB Capital over the past couple of years. Could you explain a little bit about what HB Capital is and why it was created?
Yeah, so maybe I'll jump in here first. So really, our primary objective at HB Global is to grow value for our employee owners. And so, you know, every waking moment that I'm thinking about business, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, how do we as an organization create value for our employee owners. And, you know, as Trent said, you know, these ideas really started to crop up probably in around 2020. We were 10 years into our ESOP experience. And really, the world had changed for us very dramatically. You know, I would articulate that we took an incredible amount of risk in the early years. But I think that risk was really appropriate based on what we were trying to accomplish for our employee owners. But fast forward a decade, you know, all of a sudden the people that had been with us, you know, for that first decade had balances in their ESOP plans of, you know, $100,000, $150,000, $200,000. And you really start to contemplate the responsibility you have, you know, for those individuals and the resources that are in their account. And so we really started putting our thinking caps on, you know, of how we could really continue to deploy the experience that we had had through the mechanical contracting business as well as the M&A work we were doing, and how we could do that it with a risk profile that was a little bit more in line with where we were with our life cycle. And that's where we came up with the idea for HB Global to make a concrete investment in a private equity vehicle. So the risk to HB Global would be, you know, that amount of resource. But at the same time, you know, be able to deploy really the experiences that we've had, you know, over time and produce financial returns for our employee owners. And then I have a secondary mission of what I'm doing in business is really built around employee ownership, you know, and how do we, you know, increase employee ownership in our economy, the value that we get out of employee owned companies. And, you know, one of the things that we're seeing, you know, out there is private equity is becoming a bigger and bigger and bigger player. They're collecting more and more capital. And so more and more private businesses are being acquired by private equity. You know, and I'm not one of these folks that paints private equity, you know, as one thing. There's all kinds of different models out there. And given that, you know, I thought there was a space for using a private equity vehicle to acquire a company and really with the end being creating employee owned companies. And so that was really what we were trying to accomplish, you know, and we're well under our way here and excited about what we're doing with HB Capital and really starting to see, you know, some of the fruits of our labor.
And maybe I could hit on the model a little bit. So, and Cole, Bob, Sarah, step in with any questions or things I miss here.
Sure.
But really, when we first started talking about this back in 2020, Bob had three key things to focus on as we started researching how we could do this. It was how do we mix private capital with ESOPs was one. Two is how do we leverage all the knowledge that HB has gained over the last 10 years. And three is how do we keep promoting employee ownership through it? So we took all those things and started just researching the different strategies that were out there. So as Bob said, private capital has been flowing into these funds more and more every year. And we started to see some of them involving ESOPs. So the big strategy at the time was around turning companies to ESOP on the front end and then using a mezzanine structure that allows the private equity firm to generate a return 10 years from now or whatever it is. So they're earning interest on their investment and then they're generating a return at the end, but the company's ESOP from day one. Kind of our thesis was one of the biggest things or one of the biggest challenges with ESOPs is how complex it is to start and how expensive it is to start. So we thought, well, what if we can just acquire the company in the most simple transaction? the same way the sellers are getting other offers, but we're guaranteeing that we will turn it to an ESOP at the end of the transaction. So we thought this would be a way more efficient way to do it and promote employee ownership over time, because we'd have simple transactions on the front end, not involved with ESOPs, but guarantee the exit to the ESOP on the back end. So that's really the differentiator in what was happening and kind of our spin on it and how we thought it would work best.
Yeah, and I'll jump in there too from the complexity standpoint of ESOPs. I think Trent kind of hit on the front end that it's super complex, but we found that the market that we play in, the size businesses that we play in, are a lot of times first generation businesses. And from an operational standpoint, they're extremely sophisticated. The operators are extremely talented, but a lot of times they need some sophistication from the finance side. And we feel that if we have that hold period to get them ready to manage the ESOP, whether that's 3 or 5 years down the road, that could help them prepare for the actual ESOP, which, as we know, on a yearly basis, there's a lot of different processes, whether it's evaluation or just sophisticated finance in general. You have to have that to have an ESOP. So really, that's part of our model, is we buy businesses that are super, super talented and super advanced when it comes to operations, but they might need some help to sophisticate the finance back end. And that's really where we come into play from our participation with the business once we actually acquire the business.
And Sarah, I would add that it's also allowed us to use the same exact pitch we have historically used at HB Global, which really is around, we attract owners that not only want a liquidity event for themselves, which most of them need for their retirement. It's been part of their plan all along. You know, they put their blood, sweat, and tears, you know, into this business over, in some cases, an entire career. And, you know, it's viewed as their retirement. And so we still give them that opportunity to get liquid on their business. But at the same time, they realize that they didn't do this by themselves. And this is always the businesses that are attracted to us, is they see that they didn't do this by themselves, and they want to figure out how to take care of all of their employees that have helped get the business where it is today, you know, going forward. And that has been the niche that we play in at HB Global. It's the niche we continue to play in at HB Capital. And it also allows us to do the same thing we did at HB Global, you know, 15 years ago, to do that in different industries today, and what we're doing with HB Capital. So in residential subcontracting businesses, in oil service businesses, and 5G infrastructure businesses. Those are things that are connected to things we know, and we know some things, you know. But as Cole mentioned, that, you know, as he got into the actual construction and working as an assistant project manager and a project manager, there's so much nuance to every single one of these businesses. And we felt like this was a way, you know, for us to learn that nuance, where we had a concrete investment from our employee owners that we could benefit from the upside that we create. But also, you know, in some way limited our downsides and still being able to attract the owners that have always been attracted to HB Global.
And maybe we could hit on that de-risking part as well. So we're able to get into these new verticals, kind of dipping our toe in them, and all the risk stays off HB Global's balance sheet, except for the investment they made in the fund. So there's all the upside with very limited downside. So it's a great way to kind of test these new verticals while still generating a return from the work that we're doing.
How would you, you know, in looking at these opportunities, like how would you decide whether a deal might be more suitable for HB Capital versus HB Global?
Yeah, I think I can touch on that. I think it was given to us pretty simply that any mechanical electrical contractor would definitely go through the Global route first, just because of what Global built in that standpoint. But something like oil field service, which is an awesome business that we've been given the opportunity to learn about because of HB Capital, just doesn't fit within the Global platform now. But maybe 5 years after we understand what the nuances of the businesses are that it can come into HB Global. So I think that's another really important part of HB Capital, is that we can learn new business lines and then bring them back to HB Global or turn them into their own ESOP, whichever works out. But it's a HB Capital is another way to learn different verticals that we could have in the future. I think one of the things that I found frustrating learning about the business is that we were so narrowly searching for businesses in this one business line, when there's so many different businesses that kind of fit and could work in the ESOP model that we just didn't look into because they weren't mechanical contractors. At HB Capital, we really don't not look at anything. We look at any type of business that comes across the table that fits that seller profile that wants to help the employees.
And I would add there, we pretty much copied the exact model that HB Global had done over the last decade in the mechanical space and move that over to see, can we find other industries that mimic how the mechanical business works? So a couple of the key things we look for from an industry standpoint is we want low reinvestment CapEx, which is essentially businesses without a lot of assets. So a lot of labor management businesses. We want industries that generally traditional private equity isn't in, because that lets us get better purchase prices. So all these things, we tried to see, okay, what do we like about the mechanical contracting space? And how do we find other industries that mimic those financial characteristics? And we realized there's actually more and more out there than we probably initially thought. So new residential construction is one of them. Oil field service is another. But it's been interesting just to see, can we mimic that, the financial characteristics that we like about mechanical in these other industries now? So we're pretty much just running the playbook again.
Yeah, and I think the other side of the playbook is the culture side. And that's been one of the most amazing things from my perspective, is how many sellers actually fit that profile, that maybe willing to give up a little bit of that de-risking cash that they'll actually get for the business that they built just to help their employees. I was extremely surprised with the different meetings with how many sellers really, really care about their employees, coming from just throughout college thinking people just want to maximize the return they can get no matter what. And that's just really not the case. And Global's really partnered with people that care about their employees. And it's the same thing that HB Capital does. We use the pitch and people laugh about it, but every time we meet with a company, and we can take the oil field service as an example, is we're not going to be able to come to Midland, Texas and tell people how to run an oil field service business. So we always need the sellers to be bought in, whether to teach us or to stay on board to continue to do that, but also willing to give back to the employees, because the employees in these labor service businesses just do so much for the company. Without them, there's really no company, and these sellers understand that really, really well.
Yeah, and I know we had discussed before about, you know, traditional private equity, the goal is always to exit the business in, you know, 5 to 7 years. And that the HB Capital model is a little different, where you're aiming to exit to employee ownership. And so can you talk a little bit about what it could potentially look like after you do decide to invest in a company, you know, assuming that the seller's on board and wants to sort of take care of their employees, like what else can they kind of expect from an HB Capital investment?
Yeah, I can start here. There's, I guess, a couple ways to exit. The base case is generally, we will form a new ESOP trust and help finance that ESOP for them. So essentially what HB did back in, what was it, Bob, 2010, I think, when the ESOP started.
Yep.
So we'd run a standard ESOP process for the business. HB Capital would be able to generate cash return for roughly half the value of the company on day one, and then would get paid out over time for the second half of the value of the company. And the reason we decided to set it up that way is we want maximum flexibility for the ESOP. So it's really just out of conservatism. So the ESOP has a long runway to go through the cyclicality of their industry. As we could get into with HyperNetworks, there's an option in certain scenarios where, if it makes sense for everyone, for the business to roll in as a vertical for HB Global. So we're leaving that flexibility when it makes sense. But generally the base case would be to set up a new ESOP trust for the employees. And the company would be able to operate the same way HP did in 2010.
Sarah, I think one of the advantages of this model, you know, also is in essence, when we established the ESOP for the company, you know, we're still going to provide the mezzanine capital for the portion over the senior debt. And that allows us also, you know, to be flexible with working that company through that. If they go into some tough times after, you know, one of the profiles of a lot of our businesses is they're cyclical. You know, that's why, you know, the multiples of those businesses are significantly less than what you hear, you know, in the press about the multiple of EBITDA companies are able to get out. Even, you know, look at a business that we're in, the home services business. It's not unusual to hear about a sale of a home service business in the mid-teens multiple of the EBITDA they produce. Well, why is private equity, you know, so enthralled with home services business is because of the lack of cyclicality. You know, it's not very many people that are going to be willing to not fix their air conditioning whenever they have a problem in the summer. Just look what we've gone through in the Northeast this summer. You know, people fix their air conditioning, and that's why private equity is so focused on that business. Construction is a lot more cyclical. The oil business is a lot more cyclical. Home building is much more cyclical. You know, as us staying involved post setting up the ESOP, you know, we can be more flexible in going through that. In most cases, you know, we've already gotten the capital out of those businesses that we've put in whenever we do the ESOP. And so that allows us to be some flexible. And we're also driven by the mission. You know, we're committed to these businesses over the long run. We have information about how they've operated over the long run. And, you know, it allows us a patience with our investment that you're just not going to get from other places. And we can approach it a little differently. And I think it's a really important part of the model. And it's just something we're going to be able to show through a track record once we actually do it. You know, not unlike when I sold the employee owners of HP Global or HP McClure back in 2010, this employee ownership, and this was going to be great for them, but it was really just a story that hadn't played out yet. It, to some degree, these early companies that we're doing through our private equity model is really the same thing. You know, we're selling them on what we're going to do. Now we have to execute on it. And when we have a track record of execution, you know, then sellers can be confident that there's an actual track record there that we're going to execute on. But that's built over time. We're committed to time. We're committed at HP Global and being a multi-generational business. This is not going to end, you know, with Bob Whalen exiting, you know, to somebody else. We are in this for the long haul. We believe in employee ownership. We believe what it does for the businesses and the communities that those businesses are involved in and the people that are involved in those businesses. And all of the things we do all start with that basic premise.
And I think it's important just to mention, so alongside HP Global, there are 15 other investors in the fund. And we were incredibly selective on people aligned with the mission. So everyone who's working with us completely understands our exit model and that this is going to an ESOP one day. So really trying to stem everything off of the mission first around promoting employee ownership.
And so how many companies are currently under the HB Capital umbrella?
I can hit on that. We have 3 companies under HB Capital now. And we mentioned it a little bit, but 2 of them are in the residential subcontractor space for new construction housing. And then our latest company is in the oil field service business in Texas and New Mexico.
And have you had an opportunity to sort of exit a company from the HB Capital model? And what, you know, what kind of transpired to get that one to succeed?
Yeah, I would just include Hyper in that, which is already in Global. So Hyper was a very unique deal, and it wasn't investable even through Global on the onset. The company just didn't have any ability to accurately record their financials and their accounting systems were all messed up. There was a lot of leadership change over the previous few years, and there was no clear organizational structure. So Cole can probably hit on the details of the playbook we implemented there over the first 3 years before it came into global. But that's kind of the thesis. It's okay, let's try a new vertical, which was underground infrastructure, 5G telecommunications, in construction, a lot of labor management. Dip our toe in that, see if we could understand the business model. And if it works, then have the option to pull it into global and create 150 plus new employee owners.
Yeah.
And I would just add that Hyper Networks was also attractive just because of the heavy federal, you know, investments that the government is making into the 5G infrastructure network.
Yeah, Sarah, I think that's a good point to throw in with the whole HP Capital model, is that we do extensive research into the end markets of what we're trying to get into. So for the residential subcontractors, we saw the new construction in Florida and Phoenix was growing at the time, and we thought that was a great place for us to get some investment and exposure to. And then we got really attracted to energy with the data center movement and the AI movement. And initially we thought nuclear was what we wanted to get into, but a good oil field service business came across our desk, so we didn't pass that one up. So I think that's kind of an important note, is that there is some pretty extensive research as to why we get into the certain markets that we do at HP Capital.
Yeah. And so sort of what was, what did it look like to transition Hyper Networks from HP Capital to HP Global? And, you know, is there sort of a general assessment of how it's been performing recently?
Yeah, I can touch on this one. I think Hyper Networks is a really interesting business because, again, the operational and leadership at the company whenever we acquired them was actually, in my assessment, fairly strong. I think John Serkin, their operator, is a great operator, really, really knows the business of the 5G infrastructure. He's been in it for a really long time. And then his supporting cast was also really strong from an operational standpoint. But where they needed a lot of help was actually from the financial side of things, down to even job costing. So it wasn't just putting financial statements together, which they could do. It was more to get the job cost to the certain projects that they were working on. So that was really the first step, is how do we get, from a job-by-job standpoint, correct accounting so we can value how they're doing on certain jobs. And then from there, we really started just to sophisticate the finance department over a long period of time. I think it's still in its growth period. We're still learning on the HP Global side of how to do the finance correctly, because it is different than construction. And that's really something that I think our team learned pretty early, is that not every construction business is mechanical construction. So you have to treat it a little bit differently. And just very simply, the big difference here is on their WIP, which is a huge accounting tool in the construction space. They have about 300 job lines, where I think mostly Trent or my dad, I don't know what does like H. McClure have, 40 lines maybe on their WIP. So it's really hard from a month-to-month standpoint to go through 300 different jobs, change the estimated GP, which drives the revenue recognition for the company. So we learned that we have to be a little versatile with how we do finance and accounting at these businesses. But once we got the accounting pretty close to what we wanted it to be, then we could start focusing on the operations, which was really a fun thing for Trent and I to get to do. And the big issue that we saw with Hyper was that they were very one customer driven. So I think 90% of their revenue was made up in one customer. So we made a pretty big movement at the time to get away, not away, but add customers to diversify who their customer base was. And we were pretty successful at that. We gained another large customer. We actually gained two. One of them didn't work out as well, but the other one is a great relationship that we still have today. So again, it's still in its growth period. I think whenever it came to global, it was a much better, much more sophisticated, much more well-rounded business than when we first acquired them. But I still think there's growth, and I think the management team that's in place is more than equipped to do what needs to happen to become a great company. But I think the process from the HP Capital side was we just to hit the points, is we really like the operators that were in the business, and they continue to operate the business great. We added financial sophistication to get them prepared to be part of an ESOP, and then we brought them into Global and hit on our mission of turning 200 to 300 employees into employee owners. And that was over the 3-year period.
I would just add, the 3-year hold period worked how we hoped. We had time to implement EOS. We did an ERP change to Sage, core values instilled, explained what ESOP programs were and how this was going to work. So the transaction into Global was more seamless than a company that wouldn't have had 3 years kind of practicing all this throughout the time period.
Yeah, and I'll touch specifically on the ERP change. I think from now on, we'll probably let HB Global do the ERP change, and HB Capital can sit that one out. I think that was a tough transition. So if anyone's listening and wants to change an ERP, maybe just push it out 5 to 10 years and keep pushing it out.
Yeah, and Bob, can you just, sort of to wrap up the conversation, just talk a little bit about what your grand vision is in the scope of HB Global and potentially adding, additional verticals for the organization to add the value to the ESOP?
Yeah, I think one of the things organizationally, we're also solving for is diversification, and different people have different, opinions of whether that's a good thing for an individual company or not. But frankly, one of the only weaknesses I believe that an ESOP has is the concentration that your employees owners have in one company. And one way to reduce that risk is to be more diversified in what you actually do. And so in HB Global, we've done geographic diversification through the acquisitions we've done. We've also done diversification in the customers that we serve, in the end over time. So we have life sciences businesses in Boston. We have senior care businesses in Philadelphia. We have warehousing and logistics businesses in Pennsylvania. We have government businesses in Baltimore, Washington. We do hospital work in Florida and service, Main Street America through all of those businesses. And so over time, we've diversified. I think this is the next step in our progression, is diversifying through investments in other businesses through a private equity vehicle with the primary intent that we would set up their own individual ESOPs. We've committed to every single one of those owners. If they want their own ESOP business going forward, we would do that. But we also see other ESOP businesses, not just HB Global, as being landing places for some of those businesses. There's many other ESOP holding companies that could be a great home for some of these businesses. And even in some situations, we're learning through what we do. HB Global lends support where we can because we're a big investor in HB Capital. So we're learning about these businesses as we go through it. And if there's a business where that owner believes it makes the most sense for them to be part of HB Global, our cultures align, they've already implemented an EOS system, which all of our businesses do, all of those things, we could be a potential landing spot for those businesses as well. But the mission is to create employee owners. The mission is to recognize that businesses, serve the communities they're in. And if we keep the resources within those communities, we think we're doing a service to all those communities. And if you go through and look at where our employees live and the balances that they're creating, those are resources that are going to stay within those communities. We think this is a really big part of what we do. And, we are going to endeavor to produce things for what we're trying to do, and so this is just one more vehicle for us to accomplish our mission of producing employee owners and you know, something that in the not too distant future, when all of us retire, you know, we can be proud not only of what we produced while we were doing it, but the organization that we established to keep on doing it in the future. And, you know, that's a big deal to us at HB Global, HB Capital. And I couldn't be more proud of what we're producing for our employee owners and for our communities.
This is such an innovative approach to, you know, in increasing employee ownership with a little bit of a twist on your traditional private equity. And so I'm just really excited for you guys and for the team to kind of get the word out there and grow the business and help support employee ownership in at the same time. And so Trent, Cole, Bob, do you guys have any other final thoughts in closing?
Appreciate it.
All right. Well, thank you very much and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. If you have questions for Bob, we'd love to hear them and answer them in future podcasts. Feel free to submit them to eopodcast@hb-global.com, and we'll see you next time.